Seattleites are not so into organized religion. The Pew Research Center says the number one church affiliation in Seattle is none, 37% unaffiliated. My guest believes that this speaks well of us, Leslie Hazelton. Your latest book is Agnostic, A Spirited Manifesto. Welcome.
Thank you.
Manifestos are for convincing people, are they not? What are you trying to convince us of?
The subtitle, A Spirited Manifesto, is deliberately ironic because, obviously, I'm not trying to preach agnosticism. In fact, I take the ism out of that word if I could, since the last thing we need is yet another ism, another sort of so-called pompously complete system of thought that tells you, you know, you should adhere to some sort of party line. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to convince anyone. All I'm saying is, actually, not all I'm saying, everything I'm saying is think larger. Don't rush for a safe seat at one end or the other of a totally artificially created spectrum, created partly by pollsters, by the way, yeah, of yes or no, belief, unbelief, for or against, you know, Trump, no Trump.
Yes.
This is an amazing reduction of these magnificent questions and ultimately unanswerable questions of meaning and existence. And you want to reduce them to this dismayingly flat line? No way.
Are you saying atheists are narrow-minded?
I'm saying they're as capable of being dogmatic as any political demagogue or religious fundamentalist. Sometimes, yes. Case in point, H2D2. Well, that's how I refer to the four horsemen.
The four horsemen, yes. Right. That would be Hitchens. Yeah, go ahead.
Harris, Hitchens, Dawkins, and Dennett. How's that?
Very good. And the most famous atheist authors.
Right. And they, all of them, tend to taunt this kind of schoolyard bullying, a sort of taunting of agnostics as, quote unquote, lacking the courage of their convictions, which, of course, only makes me ask exactly what conviction has to do with courage, especially when I sincerely think that it's a negative correlation.
Uh-huh. Well, we were talking how I am a questioner. I'm in a good job for me, but when I'm out with my friends and we're bantering and we're debating, I'm often just the questioning one, and they'll say, take a stand.
Yeah. Well, I am taking a stand against taking these ridiculous stands. I stand tall as an agnostic because I want to explore, because I want to question, because I don't want to be an intellectual couch potato. I don't want to just sit back and say, okay, I've made up my mind. That's it, right? My mind is made up tight like an army cot in barracks, you know, one of those things you can bounce a coin off.
Yes.
The sergeant comes around and so on. No way. Open, keep thinking, keep questioning. These are just huge questions that have been all squished under the heading of religion, whether pro or con, right? And I refuse to be squished. I most certainly refuse to accept being shoved in between these two poles of this flat line of belief and unbelief.
May I
defend beyond that?
Let me defend atheists or try. Aren't atheists more open-minded than you give them credit for? That they know you can't disprove the idea of God. They just don't wonder about it. There are plenty of other mysteries we could do something about. We have the Big Bang. We have the mysterious human mind.
Exactly. That's not all. The word God is basically a kind of, it's really a kind of metaphysical shorthand, whatever we might conceive of, right? You could also call it, in a sense, there's a circular parallel in the concept of infinity, right? Mm. Which is, by definition, undefinable.
Mm-hmm.
It's ungraspable and unmeasurable because this has no limits. And therefore, it's not something that you can measure or grasp. And that's assuming that it is that something is a thing, is something in the first place. I mean, it's heady and it's wonderful. And that basically is not that far removed. When we're talking about wonder or mystery, we're looking at everything we don't know. And I think that's a wonderful, proud position. It's the position of science, by the way, of good science. It's all inquiry. And the more you know, the more you don't. It's an old thing. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, the larger the universe that we can see, the universe we now know is just incredibly self-centered. Because what we're talking about is the observable universe. That is the universe as observed by us. But the more we realize that, you know, we can talk about the Big Bang, but it's not the Big Bang. It's only a Big Bang, our little Big Bang, in an infinite series of Big Bangs out there. When you start getting into infinity, Oh, God, I love it.
Let me defend religious people, too. Isn't the, just for example, my sister Anne is a conservative Christian. And by the way, she seems pretty happy about it. Isn't the biblical God plenty mysterious? I don't imagine religious people as being without mystery. There's a lot to ponder on in that.
Well, I'm not so sure. I mean, this is what fascinates me, that dogmatic atheists and dogmatic fundamentalists tend to envision the same God, which is that kind of, I'm sorry, but it's that rather petty dictator, Yahweh, of the Hebrew Bible, who's full of punishment, you know, believe in me or else, right? I will throw down drought and curses and death and plagues on you and so on. So I'm, what kind of God is this? Some kind of horrible, petty dictator, right, who gets insulted if you don't believe in him. What an extraordinary limited idea of what this thing that we think of as God could be, right? It's just reducing him, it, she, whatever you want to refer to it as, it's just reducing the whole concept to a very, very small human size. So instead of reducing this concept to human size, I'm suggesting that we enlarge ourselves to something more approaching everything that might be, or possibilities. It's a possibility. These magnificent intangibles here of consciousness and infinity and this thing we refer to in the shorthand as God are just exciting and energizing.
My guest is a champion of doubt and humility. Leslie Hazelton has written a book called Agnostic, A Spirited Manifesto. So let me, before we pause, ask you, what would the world be like if everyone were an agnostic? Paint your vision. You are the queen of the world. You're God.
No,
make us all. If we were full of agnostics, the world would be like what?
My immediate response is, oh God, wouldn't it be boring if everybody agreed with everyone else? No way. Let's have the argument. Let's provoke each other. Let's just bring it on. Let's bash it on out. We won't get anywhere, but it doesn't matter because it's the arguing, it's the thinking, it's the exploring that's the fun. Let's forget about arriving at a conclusion. There are no conclusions to be arrived at. Let's just think.
Well, that makes me wonder whether there are enough arguers in Seattle for you.
Oh, I'm hoping so.
We're not known for it, but we will talk. We're going to talk again in a few minutes about Seattle's unaffiliatedness. I also want to know whether your agnosticism extends to other controversies like politics. Are you a political agnostic? We'll talk more in a moment. But I just want to tell listeners, you will be at Town Hall Seattle tonight.
I will at 7:30.
7:30. Leslie Hazelton with us again in a few minutes on KUOW's The Record. This is the Record. We've been talking this hour with Leslie Hazelton, author of Agnostic, A Spirited Manifesto. You live on Lake Union, right,
I
Leslie?
Do. Yes.
We were saying earlier that the number one church affiliation in Seattle is none. Why is Seattle so religiously unaffiliated, do you think?
Oh, I attribute everything good about Seattle to the Cascades.
Oh?
It puts us at a different angle to the rest of the United States. It means we're much more independent. We don't go with that flow. We make our own flow. And I love that about Seattle.
So you don't mean the Cascades as a place of godlike contemplation. You mean we've just sort of jumped over a wall from the rest of
I mean, they're a barrier between us and all the insanity that's going on in what we call America.
So your book is on behalf of doubt and humility and agnosticism. So we're relatively agnostic in Seattle. Do you think it makes us any happier here?
Does it make us any happier?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what makes me happy. What makes me happy is not being that intellectual couch potato. What makes me happy is thinking and exploring and getting excited about ideas and not rushing for that safe seat of having made up my mind, right? This to me is happiness. Life without thought, life when you're sort of absolutely convinced that you're right, is just ineffably boring. I mean, conviction. Yeah, there's a lot of conviction around these days, right?
So I've
in
heard.
Both, yes, politics as well as religion, and in America and in the world. And it's worth remembering that conviction has a double meaning. Right? It's not only to be convinced, It's also to be convicted, like a prisoner in a cell, to be closed in, constrained, confined. Yeah. Does anybody really want that? Well, people who are convinced of things do. So when you're convinced, you stop thinking. It's a refuge from thought. It's not thought. It's a refuge from thought, and very often a refuge from humanity, too.
But are you convinced of nothing? You mentioned politics. Are you a political agnostic?
No, I'm an enthusiastic political observer and take very, very strong political positions. But no, I can never say I'm convinced. Am I convinced that Bernie would be a great president, or am I convinced that Hillary would be a great president? Neither. How do I know? How can I possibly be convinced? I can trust. I can think. I can have faith, perhaps, in them. Though it's really stupid to put your faith in any politician. But basically, we're talking about hope there. We're not talking about belief, and we're not talking about faith. We're talking about hope. And that's another field altogether.
But separate from knowing how the candidates would perform, what about your political convictions? For example, do you consider anything? Are you open-minded about everything? Waterboarding, ethnic cleansing, slavery, all of these have become political fights. Are you out of all fights?
Are you kidding?
I think not. But tell me how that fits in, because I don't think you're just writing about religion when you are writing on behalf of agnosticism and open-mindedness.
The agnostic stance sees. It doesn't see what it wants to see. It doesn't see what it thinks it should see. It doesn't think, it doesn't imagine what it's seeing. It actually has the guts to stand and to look at what actually is. And when it sees evil, it is capable of recognizing evil and standing up against it and acting against it, not just standing and not just speaking, but acting against it in whatever form, whether it's been done in the name of religion, as in this particular instance, I do agree with Hitchens that there's been a lot of evil done in the name of religion, which does not mean that religion is evil. Because, you know, I could equally make the argument that there's been a lot of evil done in the name of love, right? Love of country, patriotism, and so on. Like waterboarding. Love of your spouse, like I killed her because I loved her so much, right? Love of children, right? Which is the pedophile's excuse, of course. I don't abuse children. I love them. You could say, nobody's going to point to all the evil done in the name of love and say, well, yeah, love is evil. So this is simply not logical thinking. But I think the agnostic stance is not afraid to look. It's not afraid to see what's there. And it sure as hell is not afraid to speak up and act against evil.
What does evil mean to an agnostic, though? Who's the if there's no judge, what's good and bad? Just what, is it what Leslie wants?
You know,
is good?
Just because the Ten Commandments, one of the Ten Commandments said that thou shalt not kill. It's not like the Hebrew Bible invented that. This is one of the basic rules for how we survive as a society. Most of the Ten Commandments existed in one form or another way, way, way before whatever happened or did not happen on Mount Sinai in the Bronze Age, right? These are the basic rules for how we survive as a society, as social beings, the sense of responsibility to each other. It's not the sole province of religion. I mean, there was a time when, you know, sort of religion put forward God as the explanation of everything. And now what happens is that people who have a very limited idea of what science is try to put forward science as the explanation of everything. There is no explanation of everything, guys. Let's just keep on looking and keep on exploring. And the further we go, the more we realize how much more there is.
If I want to be less convicted, I want to be, let's say I want to be more agnostic, how do I go about it?
I'd say think larger, and I say this out of rather peculiar personal experience. It came from the time I was on a racetrack and went into one turn way too fast. The car skidded and rolled over several times. And as it was rolling, I thought, this is it. You know, I'm about to die, and I've read about this. This is where my whole life flashes in front of me, right? I know this is going to happen. Didn't happen. What happened was that there was a single sentence that repeated itself very slowly and very insistently in my mind. And that sentence was, Leslie, this is a really stupid way to die. And it was an absurd sentence. It only occurred to me much later to ask what I consider an intelligent way to die. And then later still to ask why I was even asking this question, which is when I realized it was entirely based on my own self-involvement. I mean, I hope I'm not the only one who's like this, but you know, my life is clearly extremely significant to me, but so apparently is my death, even though if I was dead, I wouldn't be around to appreciate that fact. So why am I placing myself at the center of everything like this? Because that's how we are. That's how we see. We're human beings. It's us doing the observing. So there's always this tendency to put ourselves in the middle of everything. So really, please, just kind of step out of that a little bit and think larger. That's what I'm trying to do.
Question your own story.
Yeah.
Last question then. Do you find enough? You talked earlier about the love of argument, and you've moved to Seattle. Do you find enough argument in Seattle? We're not known for enjoying the argument.
It's kind of disappointing that way.
Is it?
Please argue with me. I love arguing. It's not an act of aggression. It's an act of intellectual engagement. Yes, let's get to this over the dinner table and so on. I'm not throwing a hand grenade into the middle of the dinner table. I just want to talk about the issues. So let's get into them.
You can argue personally with Leslie Hazelton tonight at Town Hall Seattle. She's speaking at 7:30. She's the author of Agnostic, A Spirited Manifesto. You're on Twitter. Could I fight with you there if I wanted to?
Oh, please. Open invitation. Accidental Theo. That's me.
Excellent. Accidental Theo. And, of course, we're live tweeting this show at KUOW. Leslie Hazelton, thank you for coming.
Thanks, Bill.
Pleasure. See you.